This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9. My name is Rich Bradbury and I'm in the studio with
Jeff Sandu
and Majida Hashim.
It is Thursday the 19th of October. Of course, yesterday was a holiday. Hope you all managed to get enough muruku. My belly is now full. I cannot move. I'm feeling a little bit kind of stiff and stagnant, and you know, so I'm trying to push through today.
Good day then.
A good day. A good day it was indeed. Mm-hmm. Of course, we will have stories to cover and it is Tech Thursday, so that's why Jeff is with us today. Whole bunch of tech stories. We'll be kicking it off in a minute about how giant robots fought, and it was the biggest letdown of everything.
If you're expecting Pacific Rim, or boy,
definitely not. We're then going to quickly and briefly touch on the first 5G mobile net connection that's claimed by Qualcomm. We're going to discuss that and whether or not they are accurate or not. Majida's got a story about how the Middle East's biggest ride-hailing firm is hiring women drivers in Saudi Arabia. Smart move. And then how a new technology could help find the next Harvey Weinstein. And then we're going to finish up with a little bit of a scary story that I know Jeff will be covering in more depth with Matt Armitage a little bit later, how Google's AI now creates code better than its creators. That is something to worry
really
about.
Really scary stuff.
But let's start off with the letdown of, what was it called?
Megabots.
Megabots.
Megabots. You see, you forgot the name already. That was how
exactly
inspiring it was. So it's been years, I think about 2 years in the making or so.
Right. You know, we were super excited about it.
We were promised of, you know, these two giant robots that is, you know, piloted by human beings inside the robots,
right,
that they will go head to head in this no holds bar wrestling match that you have chainsaws on one of the robots and you've got paintball machines on the other.
Yeah.
You know, they hyped it up really well as
well. They sure
did. You know, they had a whole microsite and you could see this is like Pacific Rim. And
I mean, you got a robot there that was 12 tons.
Yeah.
You know, so you're expecting something coming out
of it. And it's tall as well. I think it's 12 feet as well.
Yeah,
like, it's a really tall robot. And, you know, this was steel fist, chainsaws, all the goodness that you imagine in a robot fight has finally come true on the 17th of October. But oh boy, I think a lot of people fell asleep halfway through.
It's like I was watching two overweight uncles slapping each other after a few too many
drinks. Wrestling match. Yeah.
Well, even that would be a lot more interesting than this. This was just like a microwave and a toaster just trying to battle it out each other. So basically, it was, you know, the world's first. They called it the giant robot duel. It's the Americans versus the Japanese. So the Americans, they were called. They brought two robots. Surprise. Surprised everyone. One was Iron Glory and one was Eagle Prime, and against the Japanese gladiator called Kuratas. Now, both the American bots were piloted by the two co-founders of Megabots, and the Japanese seat was taken up by its designer and its curator. And it's about 60 minutes long, I think, the whole battle. The first round lasted for just like a few seconds.
And that was hilarious.
Yeah.
It was just, to put it very quickly, you got one large American robot and a smaller Japanese robot. The Japanese robot kind of stuck out its huge fist, drove straight into the American one, and just knocked it over. Done.
It's
match
just
finished.
A pushing match.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a clear victory for Japan in the first round, which prompted Megabots to take out the big guns. So enter Eagle Prime, which is possibly the most patriotic looking fighter since Captain America. Red, white and blue. It has a flashing bald eagle head.
Right.
The robot was then upgraded. It's an upgraded version of the Iron Girl, which lost badly in the first round. It weighs twice as much as the predecessor and it's towering over 16 feet tall.
Wow.
Although it's slightly slower than the Japanese opponent, it runs only about 10 miles per hour. The Eagle Prime it boasts 430 horsepower. That's almost five times the power that Kuratas has, so forcing the Japanese team to, you know, rethink the strategy. Now, I'm making it sound so much interesting than what it is, though. A drone flew, you know, there was shots fired, there were punches, and, you know, in the end, round two was just kind of like, the robots got stuck.
Right, yeah, exactly. And the match was kind of brought to an end.
It was brought to an end because they got stuck, and you could hear both the pilots were saying, we got to call this round off because we're kind of stuck at this point of time here.
I mean, I thought it was going to be exciting because the American guy says, oh, he's released a drone. Mm. And, you know, the American one kind of slaps the drone.
Something's going to happen now?
No, nothing happened, Majida. The only reason it ended is because a marshal had to fire a thing calling an end to the match.
Because no one was moving.
So round three then came in. So Eagle Prime exchanged its cannon arm for a 4-foot-tall, 40-horsepower Stars and Stripes chainsaw.
Yeah.
Originally designed to cut through rock. But as soon as the chainsaw was turned on and it was trying to slice its Japanese opponent, it just looks like, you know, a coin that's just trying to scribble off top of a metal. Like,
yeah.
Nothing happened here. There was no explosive. There was no grinding. No chainsaw going through the heart of the metal. It was just a bunch of two metals rubbing against each other. Imagine that. Just take two 50 cents coins, rub against each other. That's how it was. Like, it was so uninspiring. At the end, the US team won because they managed to topple the Japanese robot over through some dramatic climax, which I think was very scripted, because I think halfway through the producers decided to, like, alright, you know what, we gotta step in and we gotta script this out, and, you know, maybe the robot should fall near the presenters, the announcers that were covering the match. Maybe that would make people more excited, because I think in the comments everyone was just yawning all over on you know, hashtags yawn.
I mean, in terms of, like, Twitch viewership, it had quite a lot of people watching.
It had a lot of views, yeah. I mean, they received more than a million views in a 28-minute fight. But although the fight didn't really last for 28 minutes, like, I think the first 16 minutes was just them talking about the robots, interviewing the two pilots, and showing off the robots. It looked really nice. It was a well-produced show. It showed off, you know, what would probably happen in the near future of, you know, of the sport of wrestling, maybe may change completely to just robots.
Mm.
But it goes to show how building robots and, you know, not let alone just fighting, but building robots and moving in a way where it's natural, that is fast enough to you know, to throw punches and also defend and have that kind of excitement, is really hard.
It's quite a way off, yeah.
It's a way off. I mean, if it was easy, the US military, they spend billions of US dollars building robots, and, you know, we would have seen on news when, you know, when unfortunately, you know, the US decides to, you know, go on war with some countries, and, you know, they send out these kind of machines. You don't see them in action because, you know, they're just really boring and dull. Like, it's not what we think of. It's not Pacific Rim here. And, you know, now you get a bunch of guys on Kickstarter and decide to do something like this. Obviously, you're not going to get, like, you know, what we imagine would be Hollywood would be. I think in the near future, maybe it might be a bit more inspiring. At this point of time, though, Team USA can just say that, yeah, they got the first one in the bag.
Yeah.
Mm. Don't watch it.
Don't watch it.
I
didn't want to watch the whole thing, so I just opened it and I'm scrolling through this 26 minutes and I'm looking for action.
Where's the fight?
Like,
yeah.
It's like most of this video are interviews, and they're either speaking or complaining or analyzing, but where's the action? And I see this in slow motion.
I mean, with that being said, you know, me and Jeff, you know, we like a little bit of excitement, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there are people who did watch it and thought it was absolutely brilliant. You know, if you did, give us some feedback. Let us know if you had a different opinion.
Also, shout out to the two presenters or announcers for this thing, because they made it sound a lot more exciting than anything. And also the cameraman in this thing, because the camera work was, I think, it was done on purpose. I felt like I was part of that Cloverfield movie where, you know, for no reason the camera is just moving vigorously, because I think there was just nothing happening at the front. He had to make a sort of like a statement of, like, what's happening. So he ran behind, like, a pillar that, you know, one of these steel pillars, and he was moving the camera vigorously, and the announcers were like, oh no, and, like, you know, Team America now has just turned on the chainsaw, and the camera's just moving really fast up and down, and that kind of visual effect to give you
they had to create that excitement.
So I think if you ever was excited, it's all down to the cameraman and the announcers. So, you know, those two guys, they deserve a real good round of applause.
Let us know then if you have an opinion on it. If you managed to see it, tell us what you thought about it. Get us on Twitter, of course. We are at BFM Radio on Twitter. And if you want to, get us on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. Moving on to a story about Qualcomm, the chipset manufacturer. They claims that they have the first working 5G data connection on a mobile device, right? So it's the fifth generation of the mobile network. It does not yet exist, but it promises faster data speeds and more bandwidth to carry more web traffic. Qualcomm is describing the demonstration as a major milestone, but one expert is playing it down a little bit. So 1 gigabits per second, right, is equivalent to 1,000 megabits per second. And this speed would enable you to download a one-hour TV program in HD in less than 6 seconds, right?
Oh, man, I would love that.
So Professor William Webb, who's an independent consultant and author of the book The 5G Myth, When Vision Decoupled from Reality, said, "It's not a big deal. 5G is not yet clearly defined. They've just postulated what they think it will look like. It's not 5G in its final form, so it's premature to say it's a 5G demonstration." He added that, you know, speeds higher than 1 gigabits per second were actually already achievable on 4G. For example, Huawei's Kirin 970 chipset offered mobile speeds of up to 1.2 gigabits per second when used with a compatible network equipment. Qualcomm have said that the demonstration at their labs in San Diego had used its first dedicated 5G chip, the Snapdragon X50NR, on the 28 gigahertz millimeter wave spectrum band. So, you know...
Well, you know what? Whether it's 4G, 4.5G, 5G, 6G, 7G, I don't care. I just want really, really fast, you know, connection speed here. So if they're saying that I can download, at the end of the day, it all comes down to us consumer. And we want really fast download, upload speeds. And if I can download, you know, 1 gigabits of a 1 gigabyte file in a matter of seconds, then... Yeah, I mean, I'm all for it. You can call it 1G. I'll still be blown away by
it. I did notice over the last couple of days you were having problems with your internet.
I have been having massive problems with UniFi. It keeps disconnecting. Like, it keeps saying there's a DNS problem, or then there's like a gateway problem every few minutes. Like, I have to restart.
And the irony of it is, my current 4G speeds on my data network is actually faster than my internet at home.
Yeah.
You know, now... Where does that leave us, and why are we in this situation? Come on, help us out.
Because the world will change where you will not require a modem and a router at home. You will just require your phone. And
I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that. And, you know, it comes down to cost then, right?
Right.
I over the weekend, unfortunately, I was in the hospital and they didn't have really good Wi-Fi service. So I decided to use my phone to tether to my laptop. And boy, oh boy, I had 20 gigs in the matter of 3 days.
Right.
And,
wow.
And it was fast. It was amazingly fast and really good. Like, you know, no problems whatsoever. 4G was really fast for me. But, oh boy, it's expensive.
Yeah,
you know, until the day where I can really just, you know, not have any pain points. And I got 60 gigs of data on my monthly package, by the way. So, you know, until the day where, you know, data is affordable, large amounts of data, like I could get 100 gig for maybe 40 ringgit or something like that, then I would decide to, like, you know what, I'm going to drop my modem router, traditional, you know, internet broadband days and
maybe
move on
it's
to
time.
No, but it's definitely
maybe
going in that
it's
direction.
Time, yeah.
It's definitely going into that direction. It used to be when you had data first come out, it's incredibly expensive even to have 1 gig in your phone. Now there's like packages of 60 gig over, and that this 5G thing, it's not if it comes, it will come.
It will come.
I'm really looking forward to all these data providers in Malaysia and how they will add value to it.
You know what I'm looking forward to? That moment when my YouTube video doesn't buffer. That's all I want. Just that. Anyway, time for a break. Some music coming up in just a couple of seconds. We have a little bit of The Hives with Go Right Ahead. I'm going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be looking at how the Middle East's biggest ride-hailing firm is hiring women drivers in Saudi Arabia. That's all coming up just after these messages. BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury in the studio with...
Majida Hashim.
Jeff Sandu.
Jeff, you all right there?
Oh, well, my ears were gone deaf for a few seconds.
Joe seemed to be a lot louder just then, right?
Sorry.
Blew my ears off as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've had giant robots who are a waste of time, and the 5G potential mobile net connection that they are claiming exists but doesn't actually exist really yet. But what we do have is a story based in fact.
Yep.
Next.
Ah. Yep. Really exciting one. So in the Middle East, their biggest ride-hailing firm is hiring women drivers in Saudi Arabia.
Ooh.
So it's pretty interesting because the biggest ride-hailing firm, which is called Karim, is reportedly planning to hire up to 100,000 women chauffeurs in Saudi Arabia following the kingdom's landmark ruling to allow women to drive for the first time.
This is for the Vision 2030 thing, right?
Yes.
Right.
So as of the government's decree, in effect, June next year, women are allowed to drive in Saudi Arabia. So right now in Saudi Arabia, it's the only country in the world where women are not allowed to drive.
Mm-hmm.
So because they're not allowed to drive, if they're running errands or to socialize or to get to work, women in Saudi Arabia have to rely on lifts from their male relatives or personal drivers or use ride-hailing apps such as Uber or Karim right now. And it wants this app wants to help women enter the workforce better. So to capitalize on this law change, the Dubai-based Karim held its first recruitment session for women chauffeurs in Saudi coastal area of Koba, and it reportedly attracted a really diverse crowd: women from housewives to working women, or women who already have foreign driving license.
I can imagine just how colorful and wonderful and noisy,
right?
That crowd must have been. That must have been incredible to see.
And they're driving for the first time. They're learning to drive. So it's really exciting. And I can imagine the excitement. So Karim is dubbed the Uber of the Middle East. It operates across the Middle East, North Africa, and South Asia. The customers hail right through their apps or their smartphone, and there will be an option for women and families in Saudi Arabia to request for a female driver.
Mm-hmm. Great idea.
Yeah. So allowing women, as you were saying, is part of the government's Vision 2030 to wean off Saudi Arabia off its dependence on oil and create a more diverse economy, and it includes an aim to increase women's participation in the workforce from 22% to 30% by 2030.
22%?
Yeah, they want to increase between 22% to 30%. This is a big deal because there are a lot of women who are not even allowed to go out of the house until very recently. So the most recent progress that women have made in Saudi Arabia, in 2011, women were given the right to vote.
Yeah.
And that is like less than 10 years ago, and women that they can vote. In 2015, they were elected into local councils for the first time. And as of this year, women no longer need permission from a male guardian to work, study, and have access to hospital treatments. In September this year, women were allowed for the first time to enter sports stadium for the country's National Day celebrations.
Big steps.
Yeah. Mm.
Jeff.
Well, I'm just wondering whether, you know, the sales in cars will surge up because now you have more people who can drive. Although, you know, it's hard to say because I think the wealthier families, you know, they may, you know, if they want to save money, they may just let their drivers off, and, you know, or they would definitely really have some cars that is, you know, unused at this point in time because, you know, they just buy a lot of cars.
Yes,
right?
They do. Yes.
So, meanwhile, the poorer families, they may not be able to afford a new vehicle altogether. So maybe, you know, all these ride-hailing apps, whether it's Uber or Karim, would be able to do some sort of like a subsidy purchase plans like what, you know, we would have here as well. And a lot actually depends on how Saudi Arabia rolls out its new driving policy. And apparently a committee has been given 30 days to work out on how to implement the royal decree. And Saudi Arabia's strict guardianship law seems to set in place a fact that could hinder any woman who wants to drive when her male relatives forbid it. Actually, it's not the entire Saudi Arabia that has just, like, you know, put a ban on women driving. Apparently, Bedouin women have long driven without licenses. It's a reflection of their rural circumstances. And women are also allowed to drive in the Dharan compound of Saudi Aramco, which is the country's enormous national oil company. Some observers have pointed out that Aramco's forthcoming public offering as an economic justification into why Riyadh has allowed women to drive. It's just more of, it's an economic kind of movement forward as well. And there's a whole lot of you know, direction forward that they're moving with just one step that they're taking. It's great to see something like Karim doing, where, you know, they realize now, oh my God, we could actually now, you know, employ women, and, you know, having that option itself. Great stuff ahead. I just want to see how it pans out starting next year,
June next year.
So June next year is when I think we will be able to then, you know, get more reports of, you know, how's it been so far. They've got a long time from now to June anyway.
Well, it's just going to be an extremely interesting experience to see what happens when literally half the population who hasn't been allowed to drive at all is suddenly allowed on the roads.
I'm really
looking forward to seeing what happens over there. Right.
From the business point of view, it is half the market now that you're just enabled to go out. They have more spending power now and they are also people who will contribute back to the economy.
Wonderful stuff. Right, time for some music. It is Led Zeppelin, Good Times, Bad Times. A short break. When we come back, we'll be talking about how a new technology could help find the next Harvey Weinstein. All right, we'll be right back. BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to BFM Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury with
Majida Hashim,
Jeff Sandhu.
On to our fourth story of the day, Jeff.
Yes, yeah. So there are reasons to why women keep quiet about men like Harvey Weinstein or Bill Cosby, Donald Trump for decades after numerous of, you know, sexual assault accusations, and they suddenly spill out all at once, right? In theory, it's called the first mover disadvantage. The idea that the first accuser faces greater risk of retaliation and or skepticism, especially if no one else follows suit.
Right.
Information escrows is something that a system holds on to an encrypted, confidential sexual assault or harassment report until at least one person has accused the same individual of an assault. Could help to save this problem. This is according to Yale economist Ian Ars. He said, like, dating apps like Tinder, they allow people to privately express interest until it's returned. The technology can keep people's sexual assault reports private until there's a match, so no one has to make the first move alone. So survivors are left reluctant to be the first one to file a claim against a particular perpetrator, and especially if the perpetrator is someone of a very high position and you are of a very low position, there is that gap. And you will then feel like, you know, there's just not enough for you to take on this thing of your own, right? So the evidence is just that, you know, it's not good enough. You need more than that, right? But if you learn that this happened to other people, you may feel a lot more confident that it's appropriate to bring a claim up. And there's a very good reason to believe that many offenders are repeat offenders as well. In 2015, ASC developed a new sexual assault reporting app. It's called Callisto, which is already in use in college campuses and could soon spread elsewhere. So Callisto connects people who have reported problems with the same individual, and it enables them to submit their reports together to the campus authorities.
Right.
So according to Callisto's data, 15% of reports in the system have found a match so far, and students who have used the app takes less than half the time, about 4 months, to report the sexual assault rather than the, you know, average college accuser kind of process. So according to the CEO of Callisto, they've had survivors explicitly say, "I would not have reported if it weren't for an app like Callisto." So in the wake of, you know, allegations against Weinstein, Callisto is now being bombarded with requests to expand the app beyond just college campuses. The CEO said that, you know, he's getting emails, messages, you know, Facebook messages, text messages from his friends and colleagues saying, "Hey, look, blank industry really needs Callisto now, whatever industry they're in." And it's they're actively considering whether or not this could make sense in different parts of the industry. Right now, they're just operating in college campuses. But there is also a downside or a drawback and limitations for apps like Callisto. If, for example, a man rapes only one woman, for instance, an information escrow will do nothing to expose her because it's only
It goes unsaid.
One report, right? So it needs more than just one to move this. So Ayer said that the concern is that the technology could cannibalize formal reports to the police as well. However, though, sexual assaults are already so massively underreported that Callisto is likely to do a lot more good than harm. So they're hoping that, you know, escrow, this information escrow would be really useful for workplaces or, you know, or even places where there is, you know, a skewed power dynamics, a Congress or military, for example. In 2016, a Human Rights Watch study found that service women are 12 times more likely to be retaliated against after reporting a sex crime than to see their asylum convicted. And a Capitol Hill has a notoriously weak internal sexual abuse reporting system, which combined political pressure and job uncertainty, they keep staffers quiet. Mm. So, you know, with technology like this, I think there is a way for technology to just help your voices get heard. And I do believe that, you know, information escrow is also being used for, you know, for bitcoins, for blockchains, for Ethereums, for buying Ethereums. It needs more than one person to verify or sort of give that confirmation before you can move to the next step. Mm. So, and everything is anonymous in a way. So I believe that there is a solution out there that perhaps could work with, you know, the police enforcement, whether it's, you know, protecting the identity of the person itself that's reporting, giving them a voice as well, giving them an area that they can then, you know, voice what has happened. And then you don't have this drawbacks, this where you come back to the office the next day and you get treated indifferently because you made a report.
Magina.
Yeah, I really actually really like this movement of safety in numbers because you don't want to be the first one out there. And then because people are shy, embarrassed, especially where sexual harassment is concerned, because it's something so personal and you don't want to really talk out about it. So if you have few people together, and I experience the same thing. And there's a solidarity that you won't leave me. I'll back you up. You back me up. So I won't be so ashamed because I'm not the only one experiencing it. I think this is why, as we were talking just now, the hashtag #MeToo has just exploded. Over the internet when Alyssa Milano first came out with it. On Facebook, there were 12 million post comments and reaction in less than 24 hours, and that just shows when somebody goes on and. I've experienced this too. Me too. Yeah. And the whole safety in numbers makes me really feel safe about
it. It's you know, currently it's the way that it's being done is kind of like a whisper network, right? So you would whisper
hush
to someone.
Thing,
it's very hush-hush kind of thing. This happened and then, you know, you pass on the message and people pass on. A senior reporter from The Guardian said that she used this whisper network to give and receive warnings about certain men in the media industry. She says as an editor once approached her from behind at the work pantry, put his hands on her shoulder, kissed her at the back of the head and said, "Don't worry, it's just me." The incident made her skin crawl, but reporting him up the chain didn't seem like an option since his behavior apparently was already an open secret. She'd been receiving warnings from him, from other women in the office. So it's a lot of like whispering. All this knowledge and information is known already. If you can put this into a concrete sort of data and you could then submit it through an anonymous way and then have that, you know, numbers, then I think you would be able to speed things up a lot quicker. And it's proven in the college, you know, Callisto has done where it's minimized half of the time where a woman would come out and report of a sexual harassment case than what it would normally take because of its confidence that it gives you that, you know what, it's a very, very sensitive and personal topic that you don't want
You don't want everybody to know.
And lastly, you don't want your superior. And what if your superior is the one who's, you know, having this, that's doing this to you, right? So you need a way to voice your opinion out. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and all these are not the platforms to do this because these are the platforms for you to show off your, you know, the good side of you, right? You brand it in a way that everything's all happy-go-lucky. You need a platform where you can voice an opinion and get that assurance that, hey, don't worry, support is coming to you and, you know, we will give you the feedback and, you know, hopefully if there are more people reporting about this, you know, bang, we will go forward in numbers in that sense. You don't have to be that first mover. I think, you know, it should be massively available with, you know, obviously with some changes here and there. But yeah, I would love to see how technology can really help women to, you know, speak up.
So in the workplace situation, it's always like you, especially if you're against a superior, it's you, your word against the superior's word.
Yeah.
And to me, what makes me uncomfortable is that somebody should report it, and everyone's going to, you know, it's just keep quiet because it's the boss.
Mm.
What makes me uncomfortable a little bit is that anonymous thing that somebody should tell, but it shouldn't be me. I don't want my name. I don't want to be involved, and nobody wants to speak out, which is why, even though it's on a social media platform, it took a celebrity, it took Alyssa Milano, somebody who had a name, and other celebrities to come on. I'm going to put my name out there, and I'm going to say that I have been sexually assaulted, for more people to come up to say, yes, me too, me too, me too.
Mm.
People, women should not just hide behind that, I don't want, somebody should say it, but not, don't use my name. And don't tarnish my name that way, but just go out there and say that I have been, I've experienced sexual harassment or assault, and that is where I am.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Right, we have to take a very short break. This is a topic, obviously, that we could talk about for quite some time, but we've got to take a break. We've got some music coming up in a second. It is Jimmy Eat World with a little bit of Sweetness. When we come back, final story of the day, how Google's AI now creates code better than its creators.
Uh-oh.
Skynet is inbound. You are listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Because feelings matter. BFM 89.9.
Final story of the day here on Enterprise BizBytes. Google's mysterious auto machine learning program develops neural networks of its own. The company recently announced that the AI had duplicated itself with a more efficient code. Just let that sink in for
deep
a second.
Mind, right?
Right. The student, as in the robot, has now become the teacher. For the auto machine learning program, it seems as if humans are no longer a necessity. So this project originally started in May as artificial intelligence that would help Google create other AI systems. It's only a matter of time before that system outcrafted the master craftsman. Auto machine learning was made for that. So here's a quote. Today, these are handcrafted by machine learning scientists, and literally only a few thousand of scientists around the world can do this. This is according to Google's CEO Sundar Pichai last week. He briefly touched on the Auto ML's program at launch event for the new Pixel 2 smartphones, blah, blah, blah. But just to kind of get a scope of how smart this auto machine learning is, note that Google openly admits to it being more efficient than its team of 1,300 people tasked with creating it. So not everyone listed on Google's research page specializes in AI, but it does include some of the smartest software engineers in the company.
Mm-hmm.
Alphabet, Google's parent company, employs over 27,000 people in research and development. They're basically saying it's smarter than that. Some of its successes have made headlines. In addition to mastering its own code, it also broke a record by categorizing images by content. It scored an accuracy of 82%. It also beat out a human-built system in marking the location of multiple objects in an image field. This thing is way too smart for its own good.
Yeah, so basically, they have also unveiled an incarnation of Go, the playing program, AlphaGo. It's an AI that's so powerful, it can derive thousands of years of human knowledge of the game before inventing a better move on its own, all in the space of just 3 days.
Yes.
The irony of the situation is that you have created something that's going to put yourself out of the job.
Correct. 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 That was pretty much my exact assessment when I read it this morning. I'm like, why would you make something that's so smart?
Putting minds of 2,700 over, you know, software engineers, the best of the best, you would say, that works in Google,
right,
is putting their minds together to create one machine that is able to then create other machines. So imagine that computer has a mind of, you know, 2,700 of the best software engineers
and
in the world. And more now. And
we have 1 minute left, one and a bit minute left. This was my thought this morning, right? The thing is with machine learning, right? human beings have an end goal. I want to create something. I have created it. Therefore, it is done. Mm. A machine like this doesn't have an end goal. It just wants to make things more efficient.
And we are not efficient. You know what exactly. I'm leading to? Okay, I'm done. All right, bye, guys. Like, this is just ridiculous.
I know you and Matt will probably be touching on this story in a little bit more depth, you know, when you get...
I'm back.
Yeah. Well, oh, thank you. When you get around to it, right, I'm sure?
Yeah, we will. We'll talk about this because it's just scary.
Very scary. Stuff. Right, anyway, enough of that. We've had a bunch of stories today. We did kick off with...
Yeah, the very boring giant robot duel. Don't waste your time in watching it. America won. Great stuff. Good job.
We then moved on to how Qualcomm have said they have the first 5G mobile net connection. They've claimed that. Some of the people are saying, that's not exactly true, Qualcomm.
Yeah, and then we spoke about how the Middle East's biggest ride-hailing firm, Karim, they are going to hire 100,000 female drivers when the government decree that allows women to drive kicks in next year in June.
Wonderful story.
And then there's a new technology that's being used in college at the moment. There's a new app called Callisto, which could help you, find the next Harvey Weinstein, for example.
Okay, and then we finished off, of course, with how Google's AI now creates code better than its creators. Just let that sink in just for like 5 seconds.
It's like our time is running out, literally.
It is. If you missed any part of this show, of course, you can head over to the Apple App Store, download the app there, or the Google Play Store, download our app there. If you can't do that, just head over to bfm.my/podcasts. Have a listen a little bit later on. But don't go anywhere, because coming up after the 1 o'clock news, we have the Breakfast Grill replay. The brand Samsonite is synonymous with travel luggage, having built itself into the world's largest luggage maker by volume. How is the company positioning itself for future growth? Satish Pirubandi, the general manager of Samsonite International, spoke to the Breakfast Grill about their strategies to increase market share and tap into global consumer trends. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. On behalf of Jeff Sandhu and Majida Hashim, my name is Rich Bradbury. We will be back tomorrow, same time, same place at noon for Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.